morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody listening in. My name is Abhinav Vikasani, and today I'm here with Siddhartha. Say hi, Siddhartha.
Hi, everyone.
Today, we're going to talk about common archetypes you might encounter while in an MUN. So, Tarala, can you please start us off?
Yeah. So, I recently went to an MUN, and I made my executive board debut there in the United Nations Human Rights Council. And it was in that committee and a few conferences before that that I realized that every delegate that you meet in a committee falls under a different category of how they function, what they do in committee, and how exactly they try to be the best in what they do. And that's what today's episode talks about, the different archetypes of delegates that you will find in committee.
So the first archetype we're going to cover is the power delegate, the one who assumes control of the room, the one who's always trying to, you know, be at the front, the one who pushed down those worse than him, and the one who's always looking for the best delegate.
Yeah, so these kind of delegates are the alphas. They're the ones that look at the awards, they look at the cash prize, and immediately say, that's mine. They speak every chance they get, whether it's in the GSL, the General Speakers List, in moderated caucuses. They make sure everyone listens to them and them only in unmods, and they lead working papers and draft resolutions and everything. They are the type of people whose confidence is very loud, but it could be very easily mistaken for some kind of arrogance. They are very attention demanding, and they sort of drive the flow of the committee. And they're very well researched and very articulate.
They're the kind of people who leave a blog just because they aren't a sponsor or because they aren't the block leader. They're the kind of people who will take up all the attention in the room during an unmod, who will direct the flow of the committee, the type of agendas they want to press, and they'll point out mistakes made by other delegates. They won't focus on just being their best. They'll try to bring out the worst in others as well.
Of course. Now, being a power delegate is something that you should deal with some sort of balance, because while you will most likely be the main center of attention in committee, you also may come off as being very controlling or dismissive. And if you're not a power delegate, there are very easy ways to deal with them. All you need to do is compliment their points while and before adding your perspective on the agenda that you're talking about. And if you're doing blocks for working papers or draft resolutions, you join their block early. You assert your support before everyone else in committee does, and then you gradually assert your ideas. That's how you deal with them in committee.
I agree. And another thing you can do is fight fire with fire. If you believe in yourself, if you have the same confidence, you oppose them, you make your own block. You show them that you're not the only person who can win over here. I am also here. Look at me and watch me beat you. Right. You can just submit to their whatever they bring up to you. You also have to bring up, show initiative, compete with them, and this will throw you off guard, because a lot of them, they're used to being the one who has control. So of course, throwing a spanner in the works will definitely push them off their game.
Of course. Now, Abhinav, I have a question for you. Since you've delegated in the past conference, were you ever intimidated by one of these power delegates?
I mean, of course, right? Like, especially if it's a topic that I'm not well versed with. But I don't like get intimidated and stay quiet. I go with the flow. Like I pause while they're listening, and I try to put my own points in, so that, you know, sure, they might get the best, but I'll at least go for second. So I try to make best of whatever I've gotten. And so, Siddhartha, I have a question for you. Do you think confidence is always interpreted as leadership?
Well, it can obviously go one of two ways. Confidence can either be seen as something that draws people towards you, or you try to have so much confidence that it looks overbearing and overwhelming, and it could drive people away from you. So sometimes it could be interpreted as leadership, and sometimes it could be interpreted as someone who's trying to look down on the entire committee. It really depends in that kind of setting.
So how do you think we, like a delegate who comes under this archetype could maintain such balance, like, you know, to come off as confident in the right way, not in the wrong way?
I have met delegates like that, yeah. And honestly, they are the type that I respect the most because they know exactly how to dissect a committee and know what they need to do when. Now, on the complete opposite side of the spectrum, we have the silent genius.
Yeah, the silent genius. This person, he won't say a word in unmoths. He won't. He just sit in his seat and do his work. But when he speaks, everybody pays attention, because half the time, whatever he says is probably the most impactful, the most resourceful, the most useful things you'll hear in a committee. So these are the kind of people you have to watch out for. These are the kind of people who the power delegate would be threatened by, the kind of person that the chair would look and acknowledge.
Yeah, of course. Silent geniuses. They're like the unsung heroes in committee. They are game changers when they speak, but the frequency with which they do is very low. And usually, they're the best writers in committee. They're behind the best resolution clauses, the best working papers, and they are the brains behind everything that goes on. And, you know, sometimes that could be a good thing, sometimes it could be bad. They're very qualitative. They don't look at how much they're speaking. They look at what they're speaking about. And sometimes that could become a weakness because the executive board generally likes people that talk more with a good amount of quality. So being a
Exactly.
silent genius means you might be overlooked for certain awards, but it also means you have extremely sharp analytical skills because you know what you're talking about and when.
So, like, what you gain in effect and in, like, you know, the short amount of speaking you do, you lose in lobbying, you lose in getting influence over the committee. So, of course, so like, being a silent genius is a double-edged sword. So you could either, you know, give the best points, write the best resolutions, but at the same time, you lack what's the like you lack the essence of an MUN. You lack the ability to assert yourself in the committee. You lack the ability to lobby. You lack the ability to debate, like in a open in open debate, like in an unmod or in a consultation. You might fall short.
Of course, of
So,
course.
Tarala, how can we work with them? How can we bring the best out of them?
Well, obviously, working with a silent genius is, it's not, it's very simple, actually. All you need to do is collaborate with them well whenever you're drafting your draft resolutions or working papers and stuff. And they're a huge asset to your block. If you get them in that group, in that core circle that does everything, then they're an extremely powerful person to keep. And it's also very important to make sure they speak more. You should encourage them because that shows that not only are they do they know what they're talking about, they also are not scared to talk about it again and again.
I agree.
Now,
I believe that having them in the block, see, a lot of them, they don't even want sponsorship. They just want their ideas to get to be crossed. So you can use them as like a more of a backstage worker, the kind of person who does all the hidden work, and then you stand as the representative. So basically, you can leech off of them is one way to say it, but then you also help them in the same way.
exactly. We learn from them, they learn from us. Now,
Exactly.
being a silent genius is very valuable. Again, as I said, you're an unsung hero. But now that comes to the point. Should awards focus more on behind the scenes contributions and giving those unsung heroes the praises that they should deserve?
I mean, if they never make it clear what they have done, the chair won't know, right? So of course the chair should, in theory, like, you know, acknowledge all the work that's being done. But then if the chair doesn't know, like, you know, what work they've done, how they influence the committee, there's no point, right? It's not the chair's fault, it's not their fault either. It's that lack of, you know, making it clear that this is my work, this is what I've done, look at me, and you know, give me those points that they lack. That hurts them the most.
Yes, of course.
And additionally, have you ever seen a silent genius shock the room in any ambience you've been to?
I have. Actually, I guess I could consider myself as one of those silent geniuses in one specific ambience. Generally, I'm not. But there was one conference that I went to. It was a FIFA committee, and I was not a very big speaker in that committee. It was more me just looking at alternative committees that are not UN organs. So I didn't go to UNHRC, I didn't go to DISEC, I didn't go to UNGA. I went straight to FIFA and I just wanted to see how it went. And there was one speech in the moderated caucus where I chose to speak, I think, around the middle of the pack. So there were 20 speakers. I went around 14th or 15th. And in that speech, I attacked five huge countries, Italy, Germany, France, USA, and the Netherlands, in terms of young players and drug abuse. And that was one of the very few times that I spoke in committee. But that speech got an insane amount of applause from the committee. And yeah, I got a verbal mention because of that, along with the sponsorships during draft resolutions. So yes, I have seen a silent genius shock the room, and I'm proud to say it was me.
That's amazing. And one more thing, what advice would you give to shy but talented delegates?
Listen, no one is going to condemn you or talk to you about the things you said in your speech in like a few hours. People do not care what you are talking about the moment after you say it. The max that it'll go to is a point of order, and you lose maybe 0.5 marks or 1 mark. It's genuinely not that big of a deal. But shy and talented delegates should be able to get that mindset where it's not about being the best, it's about learning how to leave your mark. Because generally people are shy because they're afraid that people will call them out on their mistakes. But I am telling you from firsthand experience, apart from the points that they might raise on your speech, people genuinely don't care. They'll forget it in the next 5 minutes. So just try to make your mark on committee as much as possible, and you'll be well on your way to a special mention or a high commendation or the best delegate of your committee.
I agree. I believe that, we all spend money to get into these MUNs. We all put in a time and effort. So I believe that we have, you have to leave your mark. You have to do what you think is best, what you think is right. It doesn't matter if one country or some delegate opposes you. Like, if you believe in it, you make it clear. That's my mindset. Now, Siddhartha, let's move to the next archetype, the research nerd.
Oh, the research nerd. For me, it's a personal preference, but the research nerd for me is the most irritating person in committee.
Plus one.
They love, absolutely love to call out any factual inaccuracy in your speech, in someone else's speech, and yet you cannot touch them on their own speeches. Like, they are ironclad. They have facts, figures, and for some reason, they have every single resolution passed by the United Nations stuck in their brain from 1945. It is absolute. It's respected because it's crazy memory power. But like, for me, just my personal preference, I hate those kind of people. And sometimes it's like they should be the chair and the chair should be a delegate because they end up knowing more than the executive board on an entirety itself.
I agree, right? These research nerds, like, they'll bring up points that you never even thought could be brought up. They bring up clauses, subclasses, subsections, whatever. from an article that was written in Slovenia 500 years ago, right? So these are the kind of people who'll they're make or break. They're either loved by the committee or they're absolutely hated. It just depends on the way they come off. Like if they work constructively with the committee, then they'll be the block leader. They'll be the one with the assertion over the committee. But if they work destructively, if they shoot down points you bring up, if they only uplift their own points, then they'll alienate themselves from the committee. They'll lose out. Sure, they'll like you know they might get an award, but then they won't come out of the committee with a lot of new friends.
Exactly. They can come off as very rigid, overly technical, and someone who's not able to dumb down the complex things that they talk about for the general committee as a whole. But then again, we have to appreciate that having those kind of traits means they have an extremely deep understanding of agenda. They've done their homework and they're ready to come in here to absolutely dominate the committee. And honestly, I think that's something we should learn from them because their preparatory style for these kind of conferences is unmatched. It is the best way you can research or prepare for any committee you're going to in an MUN.
I agree. Like these people, their life is MUNs, right? Like a lot of people, they go to MUNs for as a side gig, just like once in a while as an extracurricular. A lot of them do it or just to be with friends for some time. These people, they do MUNs because they love it. They love discussing about Yas Kogan. They love discussing about Article 6 from the UNHRC. They love discussing all of these stuff, and we have to respect it. We have to appreciate this. Because we all have our own interests. Some people will dedicate their life towards sport, towards studies, and these people dedicate their life towards foreign policy, and I believe that's something that's respectable. And now I have a question for you: is over preparation ever a disadvantage?
Again, actually, I'd like to. That's actually a very good question because they always say better safe than sorry, right? Over preparation is never a disadvantage unless you have better things to do. Which, honestly, when you're on the brink of day one of a conference, there is nothing better to do than prepare for your committee. So, in my opinion, over-preparation is never a disadvantage, solely for the fact that you can never have too much research because you don't know what's going to happen in committee. Okay, the background guy is thrown out of the window the moment the first GSL speech starts because from then on, the entire committee is a variable. You don't know what's going to happen, you don't know when it's going to happen, you just know that it's there. So, over-preparation is never a disadvantage. It is never a waste of time. In fact, if you can over prepare, please do. Because having that much information means you have an absolute gold mine of things in committee.
I agree. However, like you should also know what to prepare and how to prepare, right? If you just spend your time researching and like finding up one class or another, that won't be impactful. Like in my 8th grade, I was in the World Bank committee. So we had a difficult topic discussing on bonds and all that. So a lot of people, what they did was they crammed policies on bonds. But like they never understood what bonds were and what the topic was about. So rather than cramming up rules and regulations, I spent my time learning what the topic was in its essence, learning about the concepts behind it and all that. And with that gave me the edge, and that led to me being best delegate in the committee. And let's move on to another question. Are research nerds undervalued compared to charismatic speakers?
Well, here's how I look at it. Charismatic speakers need information. Research nerds already have that. People don't need to listen to them. All they need is those facts and those figures that they hold so dearly to themselves that gets them those points, that gets them those awards, right? No one else needs to hear your speech in committee. Just make sure the executive board does, right? Charismatic speakers can do everything, right? But if they don't have the right information, all that charisma goes down the drain. You need to have the right information. And for that reason, research nerds are very important. However, people would rather have someone who's a smooth talker than someone who gives them the content to talk smooth. So yes, in my opinion, research nerds are very undervalued, and I think that's something that should change.
I agree with that. Like these people, they're the ones who come up with the points, you know, like the ones that the chat's looking for. But because of their lack of ability to express such points in some instances, they suffer a lot compared to those who might not have the best points but can effectively get their points across. Now let's talk enough about the research nerds. Let's move on to the diplomat. So what are your opinions on the diplomat, Radala?
Okay, I absolutely love the diplomat. I like to be a diplomat in committee. I love delegates who are diplomats. If it's not me, if it's someone else, that's also great. Diplomats can never hurt. They're amazing people. I love them. And even when I made my EB debut, I was very sad to see that there was no pure diplomatic committee. It was either a diplomat and a research nerd, or a diplomat and a power delegate, or a diplomat and a silent genius. I just wanted to see someone who had those like pure skills of being calm, being composed, the delegate that everyone loves, that one mediator that makes sure a committee doesn't go out of hand. Right? They're amazing at negotiating, they're amazing at listening, and they win allies very easily to the point where even the people that don't like them that much are drawn to them like metal to magnets.
I agree. The diplomats are probably the most important people in committee, because if you don't have them within the committee, people will just spend their entire time arguing over one or two clauses in the working paper. They won't get work done. They'll spend their time talking, arguing over one a word, a phrase, a sentence, you know, a full stop even. But with these, you know, diplomats, everything gets smoothed out. They're like an iron smoothing over the wrinkles on a cloth. I believe that having them in a committee is essential, right? These are the people who will win people for your block. They're the people who'll do all the lobbying. They're the people who listen and don't judge. They're the people who help you constructively and not destructively.
Of course, of course. And like, sometimes all of these pros have to come with some cons because
Of
as
course.
much as I love diplomats, sometimes they are very cautious and very indecisive. And the things that power delegates do, the confrontation, making sure their point is heard regardless of who is affected. Sometimes diplomats struggle to do that. They avoid confrontation a lot. If a conflict is avoidable, they will avoid it, even though it is probably more productive to have that kind of conflict.
I
But
agree.
you can, yeah,
But
you
this isn't.
can learn a lot from them.
Yeah, I agree. But, and this leads to an important question. Is being too nice a bad thing?
It's a very double-sided question, because being nice, it's great, right? Like everyone loves you, no one has a problem with you, and you make sure that people feel heard, people feel good around you. But then again, MUNs, as much fun as they are, and as much people skills as you need, they are ruthless. People in committee do not care how nice you are. All they're looking for is that award. And if you do not have the cutthroat attitude that you need to have sometimes to be able to get to that place, to be able to deal with those people who are trying to get to the award, then yes, being too nice can hurt your position. But in my opinion, I'd rather be nice and be a good person than be a completely power hungry or award hungry delegate that does not care what happens to the people in committee. So again, it's very beneficial to have that kind of balance.
I agree. Like I believe you shouldn't be one or the other. You should have both in your skill set, right? If you go only extreme, if you like only attack people, if you like not care about your relationships, your bonds, your foreign policies and all that, and you only attack people, you only spend your time trying to win, that won't get you anywhere. And being nice the entire time, you know, letting people step over you, that won't get you anywhere either. So I believe that, you have to have both. You have to read the room and be what you need to be in that situation. Now, moving on, let's move on to my favorite archetype, the one I relate to the most, the crisis junkie.
Okay, I actually have a very good story about Crisis Junkies that I'd like to share. In my first ever conference, in my first ever inter-school conference during an MUN, I was in CCC, which is a Continuous Crisis Committee. In this, our agenda was the beginning of World War I, and I just so happened to be Germany. Now, granted, I did not win any award in that committee. In fact, I got absolutely stepped on and screwed by every single delegate in committee, right? Everyone was my enemy. There was absolutely no one for me. And worst part is, I was a first timer. I was a first timer as Germany in World War I in a crisis committee. And crisis committees are the definition of chaos and being hectic, right? In this committee, there was one guy who was the delegate of Russia. And he was thriving. It was a second MUN, and he thrived in the chaos. He was the one that proposed attacks on different countries. He was the one that declared wars. He was the one that was a spy for some allies in the crisis committee. And they are constantly scheming and working behind the scenes and making sure it shows up in committee. They are creative, they think fast, they work very well under pressure, and they're just very energetic and entertaining. And crisis junkies are, frankly, while they're not the ones I relate to, they are one of my favorite types of delegates.
I'm heart touched. Like in my first inter-school committee as well, I was in a crisis committee. So I was India, and the topic was disarmament, right? So in this, China and I were the people who were talking the most, and China was very pro disarmament. So I went the other way, and I made India into an absolute nuclear powerhouse. Like I pulled India out of any nuclear treaties. I made sure that we. That India had, resumed building nuclear bombs again. And like it was really fun, right? Because foreign policy goes out the windows during crisis committees. You have absolute control over over what your country does. You have control over where the committee goes. And directives are honestly the most fun things you can do in MUN, because if they pass, like if you put the most diabolical directive and it passes, it's a feeling that like none other, right? However, they do these junkies do have their weaknesses. They sometimes, they derail the realism of the committee. Like their extreme directives might throw the entire committee off guard. They might, ruin the flow of the committee. What would you like to add on to this?
Well, yeah, crisis junkies are like people who look for a movie plot in an MUN. They prioritize drama over diplomacy. And, these kind of people, they're great, but sometimes they just go a bit overboard. And, sometimes that begs the question, what is the line between fun chaos and unrealistic crisis tactics?
I mean, like, I believe chaos is necessary, like in any committee, right? But like the line should be drawn, like it should be within the realms of reality, I think. Like, India pulling out of a nuclear treaty, that's feasible. But India launching a nuke on Russia because they dislike a policy, that's completely unreasonable, right? So I believe, like, before you make any decisions, just take a step back and think. Would India really do this, or would your country really do this, or like is it within the realms of reality? I think that's where the line is drawn. Okay, now let's move on to another amazing archetype, the wild card.
Yes. Okay. So this will be the final archetype that we will be covering in today's episode, but it is definitely not the least. Now, the wild card is that one person in committee that is completely unpredictable. He or she could either be the best delegate in committee or the one that speaks the least. You honestly never know with them. They might make a brilliant point one moment and go completely off topic in the next. Generally, these kind of wild cards are the people that haven't settled properly yet into the setting of an MUN. They're quite new and they're just trying to find out what kind of delegate they want to be. But they are very fearless. They're creative and completely unfiltered, right? They bring perspectives to committee that not a lot of people would want to bring or think of bringing, and they keep the debate very lively. Now, this enthusiasm can work towards productive ideas, but it could lack structure.
Right. See, I too kind of relate with the wildcard archetype a bit as well, because like my MUNs, they're always different. Like sometimes I'm the one with the command over the room, sometimes I'm the one with the least command. Like it's always different for me depending on the committee and all that. So sometimes I surprise myself as well within an MUN. And I believe like, you know, the only way to like, you know, find out like your true archetype, like, you know, to not be a wildcard anymore, is to do more MUNs, is to find yourself like, you know, what you are, like, you know, what you aim to be, how you think you can win a committee. Like the only way to find out all of that is by doing MUNs, is by having more experience, right?
Yeah.
And these people, you know, we can work with them, like, you know, we can help them a lot. Like we can steer their enthusiasm towards productive ideas, or we can offer mentorship rather than criticism, right? Because a lot of debaters, they push down first timers, they don't let them have a platform to speak. But I believe helping these wildcards will benefit your block, will benefit the agenda more than, you know, pushing them down and not letting them have a voice.
Of course, of course. And I think with those points in the bag, we are going to approach the end of today's episode. But before we do that, I think we should do a small reflection segment. Considering me and you, Abhinav, just came out of a very important, a very interesting and fun conference, I think
Sure.
we should ask ourselves a few things. Firstly, what delegate archetype do you think you relate to the most?
I mean, in the previous MUN, like the one we just went to, I was more of a wild card because, you know, the points I brought up were really inconsistent, and that's something I'm very honest about. Like I believe I did raise some good points throughout the committee, but you know, I didn't have that, you know, command that I tend to have in MUNs. And I surprised myself with how lackluster my MUN was. And what about you? I mean, technically you weren't a delegate within the committee, but like, what did you like resonate with the most over this MUN?
Over this MUN, well, obviously I was an executive board member, but I think if I was in committee, I would have been a diplomat. I would have been the guy that, sort of bridged the gap between people with contrasting opinions. Because that's what I'm good at. I'm a people person. I talk a lot and I make sure, everyone else is able to say what they want as well. And for the final question of the day, because I had made my executive board debut in this MUN, and I know who ends up winning a best delegate, what type of archetype. I'd like to ask you this question. Which archetype out of the six we discussed do you think usually ends up winning best delegate?
In my opinion, it's either the power delegate, the research nerd, or the wild card. For the wild card, it depends on who they end up being in the committee, because wild cards, they can be anybody. They could be the power delegate, or they could be the silent genius, or they could just have no impact at all. For the research nerd, like if the chair is like somebody who's really into stats and data and clauses, like they thrive in the committee. And the power delegate works anywhere, right? They assert dominance, and you know, they make their points clear. So I believe these are the kind of people who generally tend to win best delegate and all that. So you tell me, was I close or far off?
Well, to answer your question, anyone can win the best delegate. MUNs are very versatile. Every single archetype that we just discussed has a place and has a purpose in committee and in a model United Nations simulation as a whole. Now, the best type of delegate that can win an award is not someone that is only one of these types. It is someone who has balance over all of them. They blend charisma, research, empathy, and aggression in a beautiful way that gets them that award every single time.
I believe the one who adapts as well, because each chair has a different preference, right? The ones who can pick it up, who
Yes.
can understand, you know, what the chair wants. Like, does this chair want chat stats? Does this chair want aggression? Does this chair want debate? Depending on that, if you adapt to the things that the chair want, you have best kit in the bag.
Of course, of course. And I think on that note, we can end today's episode.
I
Over to you,
agree.
Abhinav.
Yeah. So with that, thank you everybody for tuning in. We will be uploading more episodes coming forward. And with that, thank you.